Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Hands up all Luther Vandross lovers.
Yes.
Hello, Shelton.
Hi, Pamela.
How are you today?
I'm good and you?
Okay, so today it's a very interesting theme.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, it's you always see people and you think to yourself, oh, that person was an overnight success, you know, like
you think, hey?
Yeah. And you think, and especially in the creative fields, because like
you only see them when they've just blown up.
Exactly.
You don't get to see the journey.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is usually quite ugly.
Exactly, and that's the thing, like. In this industry, it's almost like you only see the peaks.
You do.
you don't see the foundation.
It's a little bit like how people think people who are on the radios or on TV.
Yeah.
Let's say you are on TV for like 1 hour.
Yeah.
And people think you just went to work for 1 hour.
Yeah, you just arrived.
They don't realize the work that goes into making their 1 hour.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess that's the big conundrum. Like you see people performing on a stage and they do like a 1 hour set. You don't know the amount of hours.
You have no idea the work that comedians, they see the final product.
Yeah.
The work that goes into putting it together.
Exactly.
Long hours.
And so I thought, I wanted to focus on like backing vocalists that became famous. Because it's a long haul and it's a long journey. And I think there's immense integrity in being a backing vocalist because there's an art in being that as well.
Yeah.
And one of my friends, her name is Tessa Niles, she is a backing vocalist. She was a backing vocalist for David Bowie and Tina Turner and whatever. And I said to her, you know all these famous people, you know Eric Clapton, you know Tina Turner, you know like all of these iconic people. Why didn't you ever want to become a famous star yourself? And she was like, well, there was art in what I do. There is art in my contribution to music. And I never wanted to be that person in the limelight, you know, being adored by thousands and thousands of people. That's not what I wanted. I wasn't hungry for that, you know. And she said to me, like, when she met, like, Robbie Williams and Kylie Minogue and Tina Turner and Annie Lennox and all of these people, they really have a thirst and a hunger to be famous.
You make such a good point because generally, actually, to get there, you have to have the absolute desire.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're not going to make it or you're going to be totally depressed.
Exactly.
And it's going to be quite a nasty, nasty experience.
And journey, yeah.
You must want it.
Exactly.
You must really, really want it.
And you've got to, I mean, from what she was telling me is you've got to have this like razor...
Yeah, focus.
Focus. On achieving
gotta
this.
Want
and
it.
There's no plan B.
Yeah.
You know,
yes,
like,
exactly.
Like everyone that always... speaks to me and they're like, oh, I want to do this. I want to be like in the music business, but I've got a plan B. My plan B is I'm going to be a doctor.
No.
And then it's like, you know what? Your plan B is actually your plan A.
That's it.
your plan B is that because you're focusing all your energy on the plan B.
Yeah.
If you were really focused on what you really want to do, there's only one plan and that's plan A.
Mm.
And you focused on achieving that.
Mm.
But like Luther Vandross actually had a huge career as a backing vocalist before he even became famous himself. So he, as a kid in high school, he was the first person ever to start a Patti LaBelle fan club.
Wow.
So
I love that.
Yeah. So he was a huge Patti LaBelle fan and he started up the fan club and he ran the fan club as a kid. And then he was brought up in Harlem, so he performed extensively in Harlem. And in 1972, he did the backing vocals for Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway's debut album in 1972, which we spoke about a few weeks ago. Anyway, in 1975, he did the backing vocals for David Bowie's Young Americans album. And the whole day at that stage in David Bowie's career, His whole thing was he wanted to have like more of an urban sound. So he got like these gospel singers and Luther Vandross was one of them. And they did the backing vocals on his album. And then from there, he did Chaka Khan. He did Benny King. He did Bette Midler, Barbra Streisand, Diana Ross, Donna Summer, Sister Sledge. So he did like backing vocals on all of these people's albums. And then he got involved in a band called Change. And Change was this iconic, like a disco band, and they had a big hit called The Glow of Love. And that was sampled by Janet Jackson in 2001 on a song called All For You, which is like the main riff on that song is The Glow of Love. And Luther Vandross was the vocalist on that song. And then for the second Change album, there was an altercation between him and the manager. He felt that he wasn't getting paid enough money. So now it's like 1980, so like 8 years down the line of a career as a backing vocalist and then in this band called Change, Luther Vandross makes a decision which a lot of people have to make in their careers. Like, where do I go? I'm now in a fork in the road. Do I carry on doing what I'm familiar doing, or do I make a change? And at that point, he decides, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to pursue my own career. And he decides to go solo, get signed to a record deal, and just blows up. That velvety voice, everyone was like, this is the guy. And Luther ran a very weird career because, like, usually, I mean, for artists of that era, 1980s, you've got the big glam artists, Lionel Richie, Michael Jackson, Prince, all of these like very flashy, over-the-top artists. And then you have Luther Vandross. And Luther was just like this smooth, very understated vocalist, who attracted a massive cult following and just had this phenomenal career, but like very undercover and highly respected by his colleagues because he had worked his... Exactly. And he worked his way up in his career.
And he had the technical ability,
exactly,
which is what is, you know, your peers respect that. Yeah.
And so this song, Love the One You're With, which I think is one of my favorite songs, not one of his biggest hits, but actually it was a folk song that was originally released in 1970 by a guy called Stephen Stills. And Luther Vandross decided to cover the song in 1994. And it was on his album called Songs. And although the song didn't do too well, it was like number 30 on the charts. It was nominated for a Grammy Award.
Interesting.
Because the performance was just so exceptional.
Kaya 959. We are Rhythm and Beat.
This was John Legend's breakout album.
From the debut album, Get Lifted. So like today, when we hear the singers, like we had Luther Vandross, then we had CeeLo Green, and now John Legend, you can hear like there's a different level of different approach to the music, because these guys they were all backing vocalists, so they're all technicians actually in their art.
Yeah,
they're people that have like,
and you've got to have such discipline to be a backing vocal,
exactly.
Because even if you can sing better than your principal,
you must
have the discipline.
Yeah, to back just off. Yeah,
stay in your lane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like there's this iconic video of like Mariah Carey telling one of her backing vocalists to get back in her lane.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah,
stay in your lane.
Exactly.
And know who the diva is.
Exactly. But. And that's the art of being a phenomenal backing vocalist is knowing when to back off and when to pull in, and like to understand or to have a comprehension that you're not the star.
Yeah.
You are there to support. And so all of these people, you can hear the music's just so refined.
Yeah.
The vocal approach is very refined. CeeLo Green's one of my favorite. I love this guy, although very controversial. He's been cancelled one or two times for controversial statements in the media.
Yeah.
But I've always loved CeeLo. And before I knew more about him, this guy was just everywhere. Like everywhere I turned, there was a featuring CeeLo Green thing, or he was in the credits somewhere. And actually, he started his career as part of a band called Goody Mob. And they were part of this collective of hip-hop artists called the Dungeon Family. They were based in Atlanta. And one of the members of that collective was Outkast. And so CeeLo Green, one of his early things was he was doing backing vocals for Outkast, specifically on their debut album, Southern Playalistic Adilla Music.
Yes.
Because the Outkast people always had weird names for their albums. But as part of that Outkast connection. Organized Noise, which was a production team, they were working on that Outkast album, and as a result thereof, he landed up doing the backing vocals on TLC's Waterfalls, the iconic "Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls." So CeeLo Green was on that as well, and then only so that this is like 1995, and then in 2002, he finally releases his debut album. So it's like 7 years later. The guy has been hustling in the background. He's with Goody Mob and doing backing vocals for all these guys, and then eventually breaks out onto his into his own career. Initially, not like super, like it wasn't like a big welcoming. He didn't blow up initially. And then he finally meets this guy called... I forgot his name. But they form a band called Gnarls Barkley. And Gnarls Barkley just blows up. So now he's had a career with Goody Mob. He's had a solo career. And he's had a career with Gnarls Barkley. And just brilliant, brilliant like music that these two guys had going together. Something Mouse. Oh, anyway, so I'm trying to remember the other guy's name.
It's going
to
come just as you leave.
Totally escaped me. But yeah. This specific song, Forget You, which is not the original title, but we can't say the original title
yes,
in
of
public.
Course.
But I love the song. One of my favorite performances of the song was CeeLo performing with the Jim Henson Muppets.
Yes.
And they did this performance. It was just so over the top. And I just love the song. This song was actually, interestingly enough, produced by the Smeezingtons, which includes Bruno Mars. So Bruno Mars was one of the authors of Forget You. And it was a huge song. Number two in the United States. It sold over 8 million units, which is massive.
It's massive.
And then you get John Legend. Now, there, if you're looking for the art of refinement, you're looking at John Legend. So his real name is John Stevens, but he was named John Legend by a poet who just loved him and loved his like old school aesthetic, like this very old school like audio aesthetic. And so he used to call him John Legend, and then he very reluctantly took on the name because he didn't want to be boasty.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he studied at university. The Americans have got a completely different education system. So he joined university at the age of 16.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst there, he became like the musical director for their like a cappella band and for their jazz band. So he became really well known in the area for his musical arrangements. And so much so that when he finally met Lauryn Hill, she said, will you play the piano on Everything is Everything on the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill? So he played the piano on that. And then later on, he was introduced to Kanye West.
Mm.
And as with that connection, he landed up writing and producing work and doing backing vocals on quite a few of the Kanye West albums. And that's how most of us got to know John Legend, was as connected to Kanye West. Anyway, so that was 1998 was when he did the work with Lauryn Hill. 2001, he meets Kanye West. And then his career just... from there just blossoms. Kanye West connects him. He finally gets a record deal, releases Get Lifted in 2004. That song that we just heard, Ordinary People, was co-written by Will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas. And it was a 8-year journey for him to finally release that solo album. So it's like just reinforces this idea that like there's no... even if you see like the new Sabrina Carpenter, that album has taken years to get to that point.
Yeah.
The person has been refining and working
absolutely
on that product for years before you've even heard it. So although it might blow up, in order to get to that point has been a long journey.
Yeah. But we spoke about Mariah Carey last week.
Yeah. Mariah Carey... oh, I just love her so much. I mean, there's nothing like a good diva. And I think she's like one of the last...
no, a pink good diva.
Yeah, she is just... she drives me crazy. And like, she's so spicy. I love a good spicy
she's
woman.
She's glitzy, she's pink, she's spicy, she's a diva.
Yeah, I mean like Aretha. I loved Aretha. Or Whitney Houston, another spicy diva. And they're just... what I love about it is like... I think... as a society, we're too apologetic and we're becoming more apologetic, you know, like the whole woke thing, you know, like people are just like super like apologetic about being who they are or like thinking what they think, you know, and yeah, there are certain limitations. I mean, you can't just be a complete bigot. But also like people struggle with the truth, you know, like this is who I am. This is what I like. This is what I don't like. And that's finish and klar, you know, there's nothing more to discuss. And that's what I love about Mariah. It's like, I'm a diva. This is who I am. You like it or you don't like it. But actually, she started her career as a backing vocalist.
Yeah.
She tried many things. I mean, in the beginning, she was at beauty school and she worked as a waitress. That didn't last very long. And can you imagine?
Can you imagine Mariah Carey waiting? Oh, my goodness.
And she was also a check girl, you know, like they hand in their jackets at the front door and whatever. And she used to check in the jackets and things, but that also didn't work. And then she finally secured a job with this woman called Brenda K. Starr. She was like this very non-star. You know, she had one hit, like one big hit. It was called I Still Believe.
Yeah.
And Mariah was the backing vocalist. This is 1987. And so she had this hit with this Brenda K. Starr. And then in 1988, Mariah Carey goes with Brenda K. Starr to this industry party. And she comes prepared with a demo. And she meets Tommy Mottola there, and the whole story changed, you know, like her life is irrevocably
changed.
But she still had that discipline of being the backing vocalist. And you can hear the meticulous, like, I mean, Mariah Carey comes from an opera mother. I mean, her mother was an opera singer who always said to her, you'll never be as big as I am. You know, like, you'll never attain the greatness. And even when Mariah was a big superstar, her mother was always like, you're a pop singer.
Nah.
Yeah, you're a pop singer. You know, like, so the mother never really respected this amazing talent that her daughter had. But you can hear the meticulousness of the singing and the approach to the vocalization of all these songs. I mean, and if you listen to the Mariah Carey repertoire, you can hear that she almost uses her voice very onomatopoeically. You know, like if you hear a song like Butterfly, you can hear the butterfly in the way she vocalizes. She's a technician. She's a vocal technician. She knows what it takes to create the ultimate vocal. And then before that, one of my favorite songs, Just Fine by Mary J. Blige. It wasn't one of her biggest hits, but I just love the vibe of the song. It's just a brilliant song. And it was heavily inspired by Michael Jackson. You can hear the Michael Jackson influence. It's thick in there. But also, she got her first deal when she was 18 years old for a record company called Uptown Records. And when she joined the company initially, they didn't want to give her a break as a recording artist. But what they did was they gave her an opportunity to be a backing vocalist. Mm-hmm. And she was the backing vocalist for a lot of the artists at Uptown. Uptown was almost like what CeeLo was experiencing with his rap collective. But it was like a whole lot of different like R&B artists. And one of the artists for whom she did backing vocalist was this act called Father MC. And then she finally met P. Diddy. And P. Diddy was the one, like, 18 years old, 19 years old. Do we see a trend? Anyway, sort of mentors her and helps her produce her first album called What's the 411. And from there, she just blew up as this, like, iconic soul, you know, like the heir apparent to Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
And that was Mary. I love Mary J. Blige. I mean, she's one of my all-time favorite vocalists. And the beauty of Mary J. Blige is that she is brilliant at like interpreting music. So you'll hear like a Mary J. Blige cover version, like One, which is a cover version of a U2 song, or like I guess that's why they call it the blues, which is an Elton John song. And she always has this amazing way of like taking it and making it her own. And that's her amazing gift, which is the same gift that Aretha Franklin had. Our last song is by a disco diva. She was known as the Queen of Disco, and she actually started her career off as a musical theater actress. And her first big production was Hair. She was an actress in Hair, and she got an opportunity to go traveling with the show to Germany, specifically Munich. And whilst there, she did the show. She became very successful as a theater actress and singer. And then eventually got married, got divorced in Germany, although she's American. And the only way she could make money was by doing backing vocals. Mm. And so she started doing backing vocals, and she was actually, how she got discovered was she was at this recording, very famous recording studio in Munich called Musicland, which was run by Giorgio Moroder, who was the architect of disco. And she was busy doing backing vocals for an American band in Germany called Three Dog Night. Mm. And they had a big hit with a song called Mama Told You Not to Come, or Mama Told Me Not to Come. Anyway, in the corridors, Donna Summer meets Giorgio Moroder, and he was like, you know what? I think we can do something together. And that's how the relationship started. Mm. But before that, she was a backing vocalist.
Wow.
And the song that we've got is Bad Girls, one of her big songs.
Well, thanks, guys. Thank you, Sheldon. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Guys, we'll be back on Monday at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.